could pull a dingleberry off of my basset hound's anus today. This had never happened before, but to have to pull a dingleberry off your dog on the morning of a Gabriel Gooding reading is a very good omen indeed, for Gooding has a rare ability to wed the scatological with the sublime. In his 2007 collection, Rhode Island Notebook, he travels back and forth, purveying the language of the road, a language that is so personal and nuanced it serves as a statement of social and political resistance. He writes, "If there is reason among the birds, if there are in them dinners and assembly, and cool talk, it is all the better for the trees." A text's multiplicity is said to lie not in its origins, but in its destination. Yet here, the open text is the open road. In Gooding's Toyota, origin and destination are often one and the same. Please welcome Gabriel Gooding.
So, I'll read for 25 minutes. Three pieces. Praise, I guess, to Theophilus Carter, furniture maker of Oxford, that he constructed an alarm clock bed that would throw its occupant to the floor. Praise be Levi Hutchins, Concord, New Hampshire, that he invented the first mechanical alarm clock, 1787, cracking that way the egg of morning. Praise be John Muir, man full of natural loving kindness, that he is a boy in rural Wisconsin whose father, an extremist Scotsman, would beat him daily, at 14 devised a clock of wood that could of its own accord light a fire in the barn at 4 a.m. so that he would not have to go to a cold building full of chickens. Praise be the first water-resistant wristwatch, used by a woman swimming the English Channel, 1927, a Rolex, her name Mercedes Gleitz, member of the English nation, October 21. Praise the difficult jobs of tower clocks, where the wind catching the hands will put pressures on the going train, disturbing thereby the rate. Praise be the wristwatch, small heliotropic machine, that it do nothing but be designed to approximate the location of a star traveling through our part of the cosmos. Praise be the wristwatch, small celestial theater, that it is essentially designed to indicate the location in the sky of a large source of light that we would call the sun, and to mimic the frequency of the sun's vibration, one pulse a day, by the swinging of the watch's three hands in vibrating, in some cases, 28,000 beats per hour. Praise be therefore the sun, we witness a life in its stream of production, the insects throwing fits in the lotions, the dense satellites clanging in the firmament, the pitchforks disappearing, a quietness thick in the people, the night closing candle by candle, the day sliding bulb to bulb, the bells disused, the fizzling stars, the colored and chronometric planets, like beaten disks of dust, fallen salt grains on the invert sky, and our billions of vibrating fingers, the hairy toes of animals, the serious bizarre spiders. Praise these all in the intricacy of living that each of us shares and that watches approximate, for watches are a kind of simple mind. Also, what's up with this continual sorrowing? Our genitals like banging fluffy anchors, that we essentially live inside a giant watch filled with seas and copulation. Praise to the 41 rivers of Switzerland, drained in the four directions, the North Sea via the Rhine, the Mediterranean via the Rhone, the Adriatic through the Po and Adige, and the Black Sea by the banks of the Danube, that by these waters were the first lathes of the watchmaking Swiss turned. Praise to the production of the screw, a fastener with a helical ridge, for though a wooden screw was used in 100 BC wine press and oil press, the metal screw was not devised till roughly 1550, incredibly late, which innovation aids the watchmakers tremendously, and strange no one thought of it prior, especially since one considers the stairwell being also an inclined plane, essentially a large screw, the stairwell being invented, I think, a very long time ago. What is the history of the stairwell? Praise be the fake Rolex. Praise that Gemma Frisius, Danish astronomer, forwarded 1530 a solution to the problem of longitude at sea, suggesting that a clock be taken into a sea while set to the time of the home port, and in this sense that the clock itself would bear its own cargo, the substantial yet weightless cargo of the time at home. For in this way it would bear the knowledge of the angle of the sun at the home port, which can be compared to the angle of the sun at the ship's current location, using an onboard sextant or octant or quadrant, and in this way become the key to determining the longitudinal position of a ship on the sea. Praise also that the word clock comes from the French cloche, meaning bell, the German Glock, the Saxon Kluge, what happened there. Also praise that we now see the wristwatch, the wrist as an essential, as an obvious place to mount the timepiece on the body. But in 1610, Galileo devised a brass helmet he called a celatone, essentially a large clock, a mask-like bucket into which a person would insert her head to the chin, apportioned with various holes for the purpose of telling the time by enabling the wearer easily to align her sight via built-in transept, plumb line, and telescope to view the cycling of what Galileo called the Jovian clock, which was a natural clock that hung in the sky near Jupiter and is constituted by the movement of the then four visible moons of Jupiter, thus telling by their position the time of day and longitude, which means that the first body-mounted clock was a helmet. Praise, I guess, to the Swiss Federation, small multilingual country, lacustrine, landlocked Alpen, home of the Alpen, home Arabic, that Hannibal's elephants shook there, poor them. And how did they get to the Alps? I looked it up. Hannibal Barco's 37 elephants marched him from Spain via the Rhone, crossing the Alps in 16 days, needing 3 days afterward to recover from fatigue. Also strange, the glacial banks of Switzerland pour their wealth into watch manufacture, such that by 1964, Switzerland had produced 64 million watches annually, crazy, and that women were hired by Switzerland as labor in watchmaking first by thousands, circa 1800, causing the demise of British watch manufacture prominence. The latter country adopting female labor in the 1850s on the assistance of a Sir John Bennett as a way for competing with Swiss makers. And in 1964, the bull of Accutron is buried beneath the grounds of the New York World's Fair, Queens, ostensibly for 5,000 years in order to save it for future generations as an example of one of the 44 most innovative objects to be invented during the preceding quarter century, as if anyone will care 4,952 years from now, as if anyone cared then, whereas it was really buried because it is a casket of death and we should not love objects over much. 93,000 watches were sold in Germany in 1902, not good. As this influx of timepieces may have caused the widespread demise of telepathic communication among the German people that led to what is now called Nazism. For I assert that thinking about the wristwatch in the wrong way can in fact debilitate the mind's ability to receive and transmit telepathic signals, thus damaging the ethical fabric of society. Praise be the nature of truth, that when the wristwatch is treated merely as a device for the entraining of obedience, as a device that will merely help assure that a body is placed in a prearranged area for the purposes of industry, that this marks the death of the watch as a machine that is descended of astrolabes, orreries, sextants, and telescopes. Because frankly, the wristwatch is a little sky machine and is essentially a celestial analog, and that treating a watch merely as a tool of the appointment book vitiates an unnatural, low-level, transmental, and transemotional telepathy that binds people together. Fuck, however, René Descartes, who said that similarities in the external actions of animals and humans do not prove, quote, a resemblance between corresponding interior actions, unquote, and that what animals, quote, do that is better than what we do, like running or smelling, does not prove that they have a mind, as one sees that a clock, which is made up of only wheels and springs, could count the hours better than we can, unquote. For Descartes did not see that the clock was essentially devised by us and is a sign of the tender care in minds. And in a letter to Henry Moore, the English philosopher and poet, Descartes argued the absence of minds in animals, saying that to grant a mind to some would entail the giving of it unto sponges and to the oysters, saying too, quote, doubtless, when the swallows come in spring, they operate like clocks. whereas I am happy to give the oyster a mind, and I argue that the failure to give the oyster a mind is a sign of an impoverishment of heart. Praise be, therefore, the wristwatch, which is a kind of teat or buttock, and I'm sorry for that kind of language, but it's a suitable metaphor, in that a watch is composed of subtle hidden mechanisms that perform a most essential function by at once parceling energy and releasing it in small units, such that each tick is a kind of sonic dung, or each tick is a parcel of milk, depending on whether one uses one's time well or ill. Addendum. And also praise the fourth chronometer of John Harrison, which in 1761 aired no more than 15 seconds in a five-month journey to the West Indies and back. Praise to the British Horological Revolution of 1660-1770. Praise to John Harrison, he that built the first sea clock, a clock to be taken onto a sea for the determination of a ship's longitude without losing even a second a week, incredible, despite buffet by wave, storm, the seamen themselves, and sometimes, which did happen, a fish from the window. And even though the Industrial Revolution was precipitated by the British Horological Revolution, praise to the British Horological Revolution. Praise to the escapement, a device which through repetitive mechanical motion regulates the running down of the motive power. Praise to the history of clocks, which is to a large extent the history of the improvement of the technologies of escapement. Praise to Ikuo Tegunaga-san, designer of the Seiko's Diver, 1964, who said, quote, "And if your 1,000-meter diver's watch will be damaged, unfortunately, in any case, please contact to the Seiko Service Center of your country as soon as possible. And last of all, I would like to say again, the watches are living machines, and they wanted to be cared for by their lovely owner with heart, full mind every day. Please love your professional 1,000-meter diver's watch forever. Thanks again. Sincerely yours, Ikuo Tegunaga." Praise to Richard Lee, 1695, who wrote of insects. "Like living watches, each of these conceals 1,000 springs of life and moving wheels." Praise to those in Norway, who are generally Norwegians, that they wear clocks, that they have rain there, that things are busy there, that they are busy with Norway, that there are old shining fountain pens there, that all these things are Norway, of Norway, and make Norway. Praise to the weakened insects of Norway, who are happy being fond of snow, which burdens them. Praise that wristwatches, like nickels on the sea, are children of the colossal, that they burden no person, mar no time, and are made of the sound of baskets, that sunlight in Norway is of strained apricot, that this on my wrist is a celestial theater, that a wristwatch is a small celestial theater, it is a small sky, a heliotropic machine, a device for the measure of shadows. Praise be again, Ikuo Tegunaga-san, designer of the Seiko Divers, 1974 to the present, who said, "All watchers are the noble-minded living machines for which human beings have created as mechanical watches and as quartz watches. In those creatures, there are the culture of the time, which tells human beings history, the law of the time, which keeps social order, mankind's philosophy, which tells their feelings, the drama of sports with sweat and tears, and also the art of the time, which charms people's minds deeply to the ultimate mechanism. Both mechanical watches and quartz watches have their individuality, and both are alive with you with respectful character in this world. Although determined by the style of your life and TPO, since my selection basis of watches is summarized in the next table, please make it reference which it to be chosen." Praise to the Northern Hemisphere. It gives the watch and removes the glacier. Praise be William Hogarth, an artist who could paint a portrait in an hour and depicted consistently timepieces then new in his renderings, as with the rise of the waistcoat in 1675, men ceased to wear watches by chains on the neck and placed them in pockets, whereas women continued to wear them on chains. In fact, it was the discomfort afforded by the weight of the watch suspended on the neck that caused Charles II to devise an expedient sling composed by a light garment for the torso, which he called a vest, upon which small internal purses of cloth, later called pockets, could be hung. Tompion, who in his life made 6,000 watches and 500 clocks, was the occasion of much thievery. The personal advertisements of London papers frequently mentioned rewards for the stolen Tompion watches. Praise be the many bugs, more complex than watches, that they have an energy that has left us, that they have the energy of children, that they are the favorites of the sun, and are like small particles of people with the wills of children, that insects are our little cousins under the uncle of heaven, and I am happy with them. Praise that the wristwatch is essentially an astronomical instrument, which we among the houses forget, that what a watch is used for, it is used for the mimicking of the turning of the sky, as the turning of the sky, its hands remembers the turning of the sky, the rolling of the earth, before and under the sun, which is a large object filled with sunlight. And this is an address to the sun. Professor, first I thought of the employment of waters from the kayaks of Anchor, Illinois, engraver of lake tops. I am far from my little daughter's eyes, Cleo, of 15 years, who lives in a city beyond Pennsylvania, in an old house on Belmont. She lives near you, in Providence, by sea, Narragansett Bay. She talks and talks, near the Grand Banks, Georges Banks, with her few fish, Newfoundland fishery, near the cod, overfished, the haddock, mighty, the square-tailed cod. She lives near you, not the redfish, near Block Island, Provincetown, near Cape Cod, the haddock there, far away. She lives far away. What do you know about a little girl, trans-historical dandelion, world woodchuck? Woodchuck to the world, bladder of halos, bubble of heat, blubber of light. I arose, my mother arose, my daughter arose, the lily arose, the river arose, the tulip arose, old ankles arose, Warren Williams arose, and there were theaters in the toys because of you. You hang like an indigenous dandelion of dust. Lucretius says that you are the size that you appear to be, which still begs the question of what size you appear to be. Do I perceive you as big because I was told you were big? What the hell? You fitted these bodies with vents, mantled us in sphincters, swathed us with blisters, pasted us to chancres. You strung us with nerves. What the hell? That you tear and fold the gingham of fogs, that you come through the Canada of space, that you signal green from the crush of destruction, you blow a tangle of crumpled shade from a copse of oak, that you anchor such dejection to me, thank you. Those eating millet seed, those eating potato chip, those unscrewing hooves, those discussing a goose, those who know Jim Burley, those eating the leg muscles of rabbits, those eating a firebug, those in the house of sorrow, those in the ringing valley, those using a hair comb, those who hit their dogs, those farting in front of children, those eating kale, those smelling of lake water, those delighting in mildness, those delighting in goodness, those cutting the little creatures, those liking the cheese, those liking the corn, those liking the other yellow foods, those crushing a boy's kite, those who walk on the air, those who lost it, those who puked on a plaque, those who rode a host of creatures, those who sleep with women at night, those who lust for horses, those who lie with dwarves, those who collect excrement and sell it, those who collect excrement, those that are busiest at dawn, those beset by pains, those who camp with joy cannot but be a companion of you. The oak trees cannot decline you. That you are here above the copulating world, in this parliament of Natashas, this clattering of knees, that the big heads of the dogs are not as big as your big head. I see you there, the sun, bigger than the big head of the dog. I see you bigger than the big heads of all the big heads of the dogs. You are big. I climb your light. I like you. I feel personal towards you. Just a minute. I seem to have lost a page. I feel personal towards you. I revere your clamoring ass, your vast vanilla climbing, your fat prickles falling, your raining of crumbling yellows, your immense light ball cuticle, beach of light, sea ball, you shag the trees, flaming, rippling pudding, blonde sun, pulsing rice grain, fulgent rice boulder, basically spewing bright wedding rice into the boards of the world. Thank you for hinging the moments together. The clouds, those great condiments of foam, roam the sky basically like weird puffy pilgrims. Pilgrim condiments, foaming the upper balconies of the earth, blowing without their buckle hats, like they are the steaming interior of bubbles, seeking their spherical houses. Yes, the cloud sun, those odd amorphous kites happen because of you. Thanks. We are down here under you, a bunch of meat. We are basically a great family of meat, made by you, hung here by you. We are real. There could be nothing. Son, thank you for coffee. Thank you for Clifton. Thank you for Cleo. Son, thank you for television. Son, that you made the curious mosquito, that you made the really loud siren, that you made all this in Iliad. Thanks. We did not watch a gopher. We did watch a gopher. We did not watch a gopher. We did watch a gopher. A gopher, what is it? Not something that really listens to music. Not something that really wears clothes. Not something who tends the grass, although it appreciates the tending of grass. Akin to a woodchuck, akin to a stoat, akin to a mink. This is gopher. Son, thank you for gopher. Thank you for visibility, which with I can see gopher. And remember, daughter, when will you sister with me in seeing the death of my parents? You sling the terrible comet. You sift the quiet space junk. The stars ride in your oven. The moon, a cabbage head, will turn to a scorched cob. There are exits in the hallways of the west. But you move like an avenging baby. Crawling, you have escaped and come in a baby's fury. You cannot come down from there. You cannot but go forward into the land of the offenders. You are stuck in the ecliptic track, much as a baby is jammed behind a fence, or a living room, or those small partitions grandparents use. You, the full of the globe behind you, the flood in its sheening, the coins of light flipping on the shallows, the sand of the gray beach, the bowels of the auroral bears, the distant telescope swinging toward all this clattering foam, these lines of brown, this darkening interior in our elbows, it is near you. All of this, each of us things, a companion to the flow, the ox are tremendous. You, the son of this obstetrical system, we thank you, even though, compared to you, we are essentially retards. How did justice come to be allied with anger, ill humor, and quarreling? For welcoming road and field of rain cobbled by wind and rain, thanks. For world of storm, for bowls of sherbet, thanks. For Africa burst from a pea, for boys who drink Darjeeling, for the globe-trotting uncles who take their awful shrinking bodies onto the oceans, thanks. For the sea, that big Russian melodrama, that beaten vault of fishes, battered water quilt of horse muscle, thank you. That you electrify the doily of the genome and filter life through moms, thanks. You spangled the distant black with eyes. You rode the day hips. That you, in the days of new boobies, looked at Jane's lips with me of long ago and saddened up the shining hair of little girls. I am a great bee and want to escape. I see now windy pines. I see now a complete bath. I keep flying. I am a bee. I am among your pigs. Now I pass a school. Its bell chiming. The children issuing. Now there are gray things. It is a field. It is autumn. There is garbage. I am above a spider. I am above a small girl chalking on the sidewalk. Why did you? the clear jar of fire jelly, lather the poles, carve the sparks, slather the backs of all these oaks, and salve the black with a batter of light. Is this the world where my body lives, this Idaho? So I guess for you the teats darken, they rise, they give, the hearts warm to harden, that you made the honey in the vulva's lips, that you crafted the piss of dads, that you do this constant change, the gray days, the bright one, the full river, a withered shoulder, that you made all this groin leather, apportioning it to chickens, to the stupid and clear, to the children, that all may sorrow the more. What for? Why do you do this? I like your clouds. Thanks. And those are both pieces and various different, slightly different form that are going to be in Rivers for Animals, which is my manuscript I'm working on. Okay, so this last very short poem is by a Polish poet named Miron Białoszewski. He died in 1983 of alcoholism, an avant-garde poet, extremely interesting writer. And this is called, "Oh, Even If They Took Away My Stove, My Inexhaustible Ode to Joy." I have a stove which resembles a triumphal arch. They've taken away my stove which resembles a triumphal arch. Give me back my stove which resembles a triumphal arch. They've taken it. And all I have left is a dingy, naked hovel. Dingy, naked hovel. And that's good enough for me. Dingy, naked hovel. Dingy, naked hovel. Dingy, naked hovel. Dingy, naked hovel.